Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
And time now for the week in health. Dr. Jeremy Silver returns, medical director, emergency medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Silver, are you at the airport right now?
I am indeed. I hope the background noise isn't too overwhelming.
Oh, it makes it sound exciting in the background. literally just hopped off of a plane, ran to a phone so he could do the segment with us. We're glad that you did. Obviously, the top story that we're covering today is the assassination attempt on former President Trump. Now, as a, I know we're not going to talk about the specifics of what happened with the president. That has not been released yet, but I can imagine that you must have seen similar kinds of cases in your emergency room where someone was shot, maybe grazed. What is it possible to speculate on what may have happened here? We definitely saw blood on the side of the president, the former president's face. Without, you know, pretending like we know what happened with the president, what's your best guess as an emergency room physician?
Well, first of all, scary event and scary times to be living in when that sort of violence enters the political scene. So that, I think on a psychological level, that we just give respect to the psychological trauma that can cause everybody, people that were there or watching on TV. And how do you explain this to your kids and what does it mean? But taking a step beyond that and just looking at it from a purely objective standpoint, you know, it looked like when I was watching the video that he was struck by something in the ear, some sort of projectile. You know, he reaches up to his ear, looks at his hand, and then the next thing you know, he's on the ground and then rises up and there's kind of blood streaming from the area. And so you think it was either part of a bullet or maybe the bullet struck something and the projectile then ricocheted and struck him. So that was my initial impression, that whether it was a bullet or whether it was a projectile of some other form, some object struck him in the ear.
Yeah, he was treated at a medical facility in Pennsylvania and then hopped on a plane and went back home. So apparently he's doing fine. These kinds of incidents, I suppose, you can say are fairly minor injuries. You never want to hear that anyone was shot at. But it sounds like he treated, released, doing okay.
Well, they can be minor, although some of the more serious injuries I've seen related to apparently minor gunshot wounds can be life-threatening. You know, there's a lot of high-value real estate up there above the shoulders. And so whether it's, you know, a damage to the cartilage of the ear and then potentially a cosmetic issue related to scarring and disfigurement, or a hearing issue related to the structures of the ear being damaged, or possibly damage to other local structures from multiple small projectiles. You've got your carotid arteries up there in the neck, and of course your skull and the brain within defines all of us. So it's certainly a scary area, and you'd want to have a very thorough physical exam before you determine that the person was or was not out of harm's way.
Yeah, and we presume that he did have that, or they wouldn't have released him to go back home, I suppose. You know, my heart breaks for the person that was sitting in the stands who was shot and killed. You know, the bullet whizzed by, and you know they're speculating right now that the bullet whizzed by and you know got somebody in the head, and they died, and another person is in critical condition. Those are, you know, things that. You know, it breaks my heart this morning that people, you know, going to a rally, regardless of your political feelings on this, these people just thought they were going to go to a rally, never thinking I might get shot in the head tonight if I'm sitting there. So We'll keep everybody posted on all of that. So all I'm hearing this week, Doctor, is COVID is back. That it's certainly not as fatal as it was when first came out 3-4 years ago, but people are getting COVID. It seems to be having a little rebound right now. Would you say that's correct?
100%. I would say that there's a new variant in town, and we've got this FLIRT acronym, which just describes the type of variant it is. And we're seeing an uptick in cases, but it doesn't appear to be any more severe than other variants. And in fact, maybe less severe just based on the amount of wastewater contaminant we're seeing in the terms of the virus relative to the number of cases or severe cases that are being admitted to the hospital. So definitely out there. Something to be cognizant of as you're moving about.
Yeah, there was a time when I could tell you precisely when I had my last vaccination. I'll be completely honest; I don't even really remember when I had my last vaccination right now. But is it a good idea to get caught up with all that right now, or is it much to do about nothing?
Dean, I think at your sprightly age, you could certainly give it consideration. There was a vaccine released or a booster released this past fall, which is still available, and they believe still effective against current variants that are about. And that supposedly a new vaccine will be coming out this fall, which will be more targeted towards the sort of trend in variation that they're seeing. So I certainly encourage it. And I think there'll be other vaccines to follow down the line very, very shortly.
Are we expecting new variants and new ways to fight them with new vaccinations?
The vaccines that are currently out kind of target the protein capsule around the virus. Is it reasonable to expect that there may be novel ways of approaching it? I'm not sure. I'm not sure how much money is being funneled into this area of research, which is always an issue. But I do know that the vaccines that they have seem to be very effective. But yeah, I think we can expect to see variants kind of on a seasonal basis, and then kind of randomly popping up as well. That seems to be the pattern for this virus. But time will tell.
All right, I'm going to check with my physicians and my pharmacists. I think I've gotten my last few vaccinations at the grocery store. As I like to say, come for the coleslaw, stay for the vaccination. I'm gonna check that out this week because it's definitely rebounding. The 815 area code texts in a question for Dr. Jeremy Silver from Kishwaukee Hospital. I have heard pluses and minuses about intermittent fasting as a way to lose weight. What's your opinion?
Great question. My first question back to the caller would be, do you have any medical conditions and are you taking medication? That can play a massive role in whether fasting is safe or not. So I'll take the classic example of a diabetic. Taking insulin, fasting could be deadly or even life-threatening. So you should really be having this conversation with your doctor. But in general, I think what we're seeing is that intermittent fasting can be good, and there's some research out there to suggest that it may be superior to other types of dieting. And of course, the sort of kernel of that is that we, as we kind of developed as cavemen and women, had periods of fasting while we were looking for food, and then we'd eat, and then we'd fast again. And so that there's a thought that maybe it fits our primordial pathophysiology. But certainly caloric restriction in any form can be helpful, and fasting is one way to do it that I think can be very effective if done safely and correctly.
Now, I've heard people doing so-called intermittent fasting in different ways, where they don't eat between certain hours of the day, They have one meal, one moderate meal per day. If someone is going to give this try, as Dr. Silver said, check with your own doctor and make sure that it's safe. But if somebody wants to give this a try, what are steps that they might think about taking?
Yeah, so you might do a little research first. And, you know, there are certainly medical journals that deal with this, and you can find various fasting patterns online. I would underscore the importance of consulting with a physician. But, you know, the core of it is essentially keeping your meals within a certain period of time and then fasting at other times when your metabolism tends to be lower, i.e. in the evening and at night. So you basically, you have your 8 hours a day where you can pack in all your calories, and the other 16, you're allowing the body to break down all that fat and protein and utilize it. So you get into, the theory is that you get into a very mild form of ketosis. That's just a fancy term for breaking down fat in the body, and that's where you get the benefits of the weight loss.
So let's say you start at 6 a.m., and maybe what, go to 6 p.m. something? Does that sound reasonable?
There's variations. What I've read, I'll tell you specifically what I've read, is that 8 and 16 is the most effective if you really want to see a bang for your buck in short order. And of course, anyone who's getting on a diet, you know, they're trying to do this ideally as quickly as possible, but safely. And so the 8-16 is one ratio that I've read about.
What does that mean? What does that mean? I'm not following you with that. With 8 and 16.
So 16 hours of fasting and 8 hours of eating. So you would, if you were going to start at say noon, just to make it simple math, you'd wake up. You would just have some water, maybe a broth or tea, without honey or lemon in it. And then at noon, you'd start eating, and you'd finish eating at 8 o'clock, and then you'd stop, and then you wouldn't start again until the following day at noon, just as a for example.
Okay. All right. Everybody, you know, check with your doctors and see how this might work for you personally. The 815 area code, I have a rotator cuff tear. What are my next steps and length for recovery?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Certainly a common injury where the soft tissues around the shoulder are damaged either quickly or over time. And depending on the degree of the tear, you might just be a person that would benefit from rehab and easy use of the shoulder while you're healing versus, you know, if it's very severe, sometimes you even just go ahead and operate. So number one is I would recommend that person talk to an orthopedic surgeon. Those folks are the experts in these types of injuries. But certainly you're looking at the 8 to 12 week range, I would think, depending on how severe the injury might be.
Okay. Do they put it in a cast? Should there be limited mobility on that particular arm?
Again, it depends on how severe it is. You know, if it was sort of a, you know, I was working on the house yesterday and I had this horrible sensation in my shoulder as I was slipping down the ladder and trying to hang on. That sort of scenario might benefit from some rest and a sling versus, you know, my shoulder's been steadily bothering me for months. I finally got an MRI and there's a tear there. Well, then I think, you know, continuing to use the shoulder in limited fashion, not lifting anything over 5 pounds, and of course consulting with the ortho specialist would be the way to go.
Okay, very good. Dr. Jeremy Silver, medical director, emergency medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital, with this new segment that we'll call "Where Will He Be Next Week?" appreciate you joining us from the airport today. Thank you. All right. Yeah, cell phone service sounded great as always. Thank you, Dr. Silver. We appreciate you joining us. And